And good evening and welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And we have a great show lined up for you today, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your prayerful and financial contributions that has kept us on the air for over 40 years now and allows us to bring you great programming like today's show. And today I am excited to be joined by Mr. Raymond Arroyo. He is the New York Times best-selling author of The Spider Who Saved Christmas and the Will Wilder series, and an internationally known broadcaster and producer. He is a Fox News contributor and analyst, a former CNN contributor, and EWTN's founding news director, lead anchor, and host of The World Over Live. Welcome to the show, Raymond. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, Ken, always a delight to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And when your book crossed my desk a couple of months ago, and unfortunately we had to reschedule, I had an unexpected surgery, and I'm so happy we were able to get you on, and especially in these weeks leading up to Christmas. The book that you've written is called The Wise Men Who Found Christmas, and we only had a minute to chat before we came on, and what I had said to you was that, you know, it's turned my world kind of upside down. I got a six-year-old and a five-year-old that'll be getting this book for Christmas, and they're going to learn about who the wise men were as children. At 61 years old, I just found out that everything I learned and sang and what have you has been wrong. So,
well, Ken, you know, we all, I mean, it shows you how culture and statues and songs and all the things that we pull out every Christmas, like the ornaments, how it reinforces a certain idea. And when I started this whole process, this journey really to the wise men, I was looking for a legend I could tell of the wise men. Like, I had done a book a few years ago called The Spider Who Saved Christmas. And so I was looking for another fun legend I could share with families that might have fallen out of favor but would excite them and point them toward the nativity and Christmas in a new way. What I soon discovered is everything we know about the wise men, almost everything, turns out to be fiction and legend. And so, you know the song, "We Three Kings of Orient Are." They were not kings, they were not from the Far East, and there were not three of them. So once I learned that, and we'll get into how I discovered that, you got to ask yourself, well, who are they? So it began this quest for me. That ended with this family read, this picture book for the family. That is a great fun adventure story, certainly with higher stakes and more heart than I imagined. Look, Ken, we've been led to believe that this is kind of some boring royal procession of kings from three different kingdoms that cross the desert to see the Christ child. There are a number of problems with that. First of all, the historical and political situation of the time would have forbidden any emperors or kings crossing into these domains on the way to Judea without getting permission of everybody, including Herod. Herod was a deadly, murderous figure. He killed everybody in his path to keep power and his throne. He also killed three of his own sons and a wife. So if he's willing to do that to family, imagine what he would do to strangers, which is why when the wise men come to him, he tells them, go find this child so I can come worship him too. Well, Herod's idea of worship is probably not the wise man's idea. What really shook me is I went back and dug through the first and second century sources. And what you find from Clement of Rome, Justin Martyr, who wrote during the time of Jesus, Josephus, is that they all say the wise men came from Arabia. So they were wise men from the east, but they were wise men from the east of Judea, the east of Jerusalem, just on the other side of the Dead Sea, in what is modern-day Petra, the kingdom of Nabatea. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, any writer worth his salt wants to write about people living in the kingdom of Nabatea. So that's what I did, and it kind of sent me down this journey of discovery of who these wise men were and why they're important to us or should be 2,000 plus years later.
Yeah, and when as I read the book, and it was Nabatea, to your point, that sounds so much better than it sounds like a fantastic place, and right. And what have you. But I have to admit, we have a local priest here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. I've not seen him in a few years now, but his first name is Gaspar. And and he has one of the largest, if not the largest, collection of Three Kings in the world. Anybody that's ever that he knows that travels we're around the world, they'll bring him back sets of the Three Kings. And I can't believe how heartbroken he's going to be when he finds out that Gaspar was not there.
Well, here, let me tell you where those names come from. And this is, again, if you go back to the, you know, and I had historians and people who speak, Margaret Barker, who's a woman who translates for the Jordanian government. She reads these dead languages in Aramaic and Hebrew, ancient Hebrew. I mean, she's incredible. You know, when Margaret showed me when you look at the scripture, and remember this story, the wise men only appear in one gospel, the Gospel of Matthew. And it's just that one gospel, and it opens with it. Remember, this is the opening verses, and it's only 12 lines, but they talk about, when you read it in the Hebrew, it says wise men from the East, or it could be translated to wise men of the ancient times. What does that mean? So that gets the mind turning. Once you know they're from Nabatea, you realize they have to be serving a king. They were serving King Aretas, who, by the way, shows up in the New Testament. He's in the Acts of the Apostles. It is King Aretas who's chasing St. Paul in Damascus, which is another interesting part of the story. But the real question is, how did we get to three? How did we get to these names and kings? First of all, the gospel only mentions three gifts, Ken. It does not mention three wise men. So it would be like if you brought a gift over to my house, but you came with your family, and we say, well, Ken came alone. Well, no, he didn't. He brought six people. But we assume because there are three gifts, there must be three wise men. That's not true. The Coptic Church says there were 60 wise men, and the Syrian and Armenian Church say there were 12. So who knows how many, but probably more than three. I like the number 12, and there's a good reason that in the second spread of my book, you'll see 12 wise men on the top of the rooftop in Petra seeing the star. We focus on three of them, but there are 12 there gathered. And the names, Gaspar, Balthazar, Melchior, what do those names mean? Where did they come from? I tracked it down. Venerable Bede in the 7th century, who was an English brother, a scholar, he created the idea that they were kings, and indeed the names, Melchior, Caspar, Balthazar, it just means king in three different languages. Melchior is Hebrew, Caspar is like Kaiser from the German, and Balthazar is a dead Semitic tongue, but it also means king. So these were kind of stand-in dramatic names from the beginning. And so as I dug into the historic reality, it tells you where they came from. It might explain, those gifts also hold some keys, might explain why they were so eager to reach this Christ child.
Yeah, and one of the other things that was significant to me was this idea of the Star of Bethlehem and that they followed this star. And you talk a little bit more about what that star or that light that they followed may have actually been.
Well, you know, and look, I decided, Ken, you know, people say, well, why did you really, this is so fascinating, you should have written this as a research book, a book of your research and kind of debunk these myths. But, you know, some of those resources are out there. Father Dwight Longnecker wrote a wonderful book on the Magi. Margaret Barker's written about the Magi. And you can find this in scholarly works and go back to the, you know, early historians of the church and find some of this. Early church fathers, it's in homilies. I thought, since we all encounter the wise men as children and in families at Christmas time, I thought it important to find a platform and a way of reaching families so that they could all kind of go along for this journey and learn this story early on, the historical reality of Nabatea, Judea, the old world, this ancient world, and who these wise men might have been. So I kind of poured all of that research into this story because it ends up being like an adventurous buddy movie. You know, these guys are risking their lives to not only cross the desert and then the light goes out. They lose the star. The gospel tells us that. They find Herod. Herod doesn't know where the kid is, but his priests say, well, the child will be born in Bethlehem. So they get on their steeds and they head toward Bethlehem, and then the light returns. The drama of the sequence, I thought, made it really interesting. And even the figures under our tree mislead us, because they make it seem as if the wise men showed up at the birth of Christ, at the nativity. That's not true. They didn't show up for months and maybe 2 years after the birth of Jesus. Now, how do we know that? Well, Herod basically sentences all those children to death, sends his guards out to kill them when the wise men don't return. What is his orders to the soldiers? He didn't say, go kill all the newborns. He said, kill everybody 2 and under. Okay?
That's right.
Which gives you an indication that the child was older than a newborn. So there are a lot of indications that help us fill out the story and the historic reality that the gospel actually captures quite well.
But one of the things that still holds true is the three gifts, right? The gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's alluded to in the back. You also include some of the history here that these would be things that would have come through Nabatea. And
correct.
And what's the significance of these three things in particular?
Well, those three gifts are very important. First of all, there's only one place in the ancient world where those three items were manufactured or accessible in this part of the world, and that would have been the Kingdom of Nabatea. The Kingdom of Nabatea is modern-day Petra. If you've ever seen the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, that's the place that Harrison Ford and Sean Connery ride horses out of, that temple sort of built in the side of a mountain. They carved these buildings onto the face of mountains. So imagine a whole town of buildings and structures built on the side of mountains. That's what they did. It's really an incredible place, and it's still there, modern-day Jordan. Well, they ran and controlled the trade routes, the spice routes. They created and had a corner on the market of frankincense and myrrh. Those two items, by the way, Ken, I didn't know this. Again, it only took me 50 years to figure this out. Frankincense and myrrh are both derived from tree sap. It's hardened tree sap, and those trees are only grown in southern Arabia, in the Kingdom of Nabatea. So they would create frankincense and myrrh, and this was a very hot and expensive commodity in the ancient world. It was used throughout the Roman Empire. But the most important thing also, and the gold, of course, gold, the King Solomon's mines, the mines of Midian, archaeologists will tell you it's the same place, those were also controlled by the Kingdom of Nabatea. So these are strong indications of where they came from, the king they served. And it also explains, Ken, why they, when they go, they're taking these gifts with them. They couldn't have just gotten on camels or horses and gone to Judea. You need permission from the king, okay? And then you have to get permission from the emperor you're going to see. So that's what happens. And that's what happens in my story. That's what happened in reality. They went to the king. The king thought, the king of Nabatea, Aretas, he thought that Herod had a new son, or a godchild, a godson, because, a grandson rather, because they said, oh, there's a new king of the Jews, a new king of Judea. Well, Herod's the king of Judea. So if anybody would know there's a new king, Herod would. So King Aretas says, why don't you go as my royal diplomats, bring him some tribute, go pay tribute to Herod and his new heir, bring him the things we're most known for, gold, frankincense, myrrh. So that's what they're doing. This is a royal delegation, a representation going out, representatives of the king, going to pay tribute. And when they get there, they realize Herod doesn't know where this child is. And in fact, he's incensed that these guys are even telling them that there's a new king of the Jews. So that's the world in which we live. And by the way, Herod, his mother was a Nabatean princess, and he had invaded Nabatea about 30 years before Jesus. So this gives you a stronger sense of the history, the backdrop, the drama that these wise men find themselves in the middle of. But it does beg the question, we can get into this, why would they risk their lives, Ken? Why, if they were Persian priests or they were just, you know, stargazers, why would they go risk their lives to find a Jewish Messiah?
Yeah, so obviously they must have been aware in some way or another, whether they were familiar with the prophets, but had an idea that there was this king that was to be born, right? And
well, they would have to, yeah, they would have to, they would have been steeped in the prophecies of the old Jewish prophecies of a Messiah. And, you know, that kingdom of Nabatea was kind of, because it was sort of a melting pot, like New Orleans. You know, we have nine, yeah, I live in New Orleans. We have like nine separate races here and nationalities that came together to create our little culture. Well, in Nabatea, you had Greeks, Babylonians, Persians, Arabs, Jews, all mingling together, sharing their particular expertise. So the Israeli prophecies would have been known, the Jewish prophecies, as would the Babylonian and Greek astrological wisdom, reading the stars, looking for signs in the sky. But remember, there's that prophecy in Numbers. Balaam the prophet in the Old Testament says, I don't see him now, but he's near, and his scepter shall rise from Israel. So that was very likely, if not the prophecy, one of the prophecies that were rattling around in their minds. And when they saw that bright star, whatever it was they saw, whether it was a conjunction of planets or a comet, they took that as confirmation of the prophecy they were steeped in. But Margaret Barker and others have made the suggestion, and I'm prone to it. I split the difference in my book. If you look at the image on the front, if you go inside, and you can go to RaymondArroyo.com and take a peek, it's there. You notice all these men, the wise men, all have like priestly vestments and a headdress that's very similar. They're either Persian priests, exiled Zoroastrian priests living in the kingdom of Nabatea, serving the king there, or, Margaret makes the better point, 700 years before Christ, the first temple priesthood, the royal high priesthood of Jerusalem, they expelled those priests. That is, by the way, the order of Melchizedek that we hear about every Sunday at Mass. You know, they say we offer this bread as Abraham did in the order of Melchizedek. Well, that is the order of Melchizedek, the first temple priesthood. They were expelled 700 years before Jesus. Where do they go, Ken?
Nabatea?
They go to the kingdom of Nabatea. It's the largest Jewish community in the Middle East at the time. And Raymond Brown tells us that, and historians of the time will tell you that. So they're there serving the king. If they were members of that first temple priesthood, they would have been steeped in the Jewish prophecies, waiting for the Messiah. So 700 years later, their descendants, still keeping the old ways alive. Remember I told you earlier, you translate wise men from the East in the Hebrew, it reads wise men from the ancient times. So this might fit the bill of what Matthew was trying to tell his readers. And that gospel, by the way, was written for a Jewish audience. Okay, so and that's why I think the Magi appear at the beginning of the story, to make the connection between the old ways and the new. So they go on their horses, they run out, and I think they did ride horses. The kingdom of Nabatea raised and introduced Arabian horses into the commonplace usage 100 years before Jesus. This is how they would have traveled, and in the old world it was the preferred mode of travel, because they could go further than camels for longer distances and faster. And it's only a three-day journey, only 300 miles around the Dead Sea to Jerusalem from Petra. So they go out. Those three gifts have importance again, Ken, and this blew my mind. This, every time you see those three kings, I want you to think about them as royal priests of this first temple priesthood, because this makes sense. And maybe they're three kings in this sense, that they're members of the royal high priesthood, in the way that we're all kings because of the kingship of Jesus Christ, okay? Yeah. They run out, they bring these gifts. Philo of Alexandria, who's a first century historian, tells us, there were markings of the first temple high priesthood, that royal priesthood. One was they had gold, literal gold, on their vestments, okay, like ornaments on a tree. That was part of their vestiture, gold. Frankincense was burned in the first temple as a sign of prayer going up to the Almighty. And most importantly, and this is what I hope everybody bears in mind every time you hear this story and think about these gifts, myrrh was kept in the Holy of Holies. It was an oil. Holy of Holies is where God resided, where the Ark of the Covenant resided. And there was this myrrh oil. The myrrh oil was used for a very specific purpose, and only in the first temple. It wasn't used in the second temple. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they go out and they bring this to this child. Myrrh was used to anoint members of the royal priesthood and kings. So these wise men may have been members of that order of Melchizedek, the royal high priesthood, going out to anoint the final member, the ultimate high priest, Jesus Christ, the Savior, and to restore the first temple worship and to restore that ancient Judaic belief. So that just totally blew my mind when I came across it. And again, it underscores why the Gospel of Matthew begins with this little story of the Magi.
Yeah, and how important that is. And I'm just thinking that, you know, just those 12 lines, you've probably expanded into volumes that could be written as to the background and the significance of this whole occurrence. And I just want to make sure that folks know they may recognize the voice, but if you joined us late, our guest today is none other than Raymond Arroyo, and he's written a children's book for Christmas called The Wise Men Who Found Christmas. It's published by Sophia Institute Press. I can tell you that I was in the St. Jude shop locally here in Philadelphia last week, and they had multiple copies there for sale. So if you have grandkids, young kids, nieces, nephews that you still need to Christmas shop for, this would make an absolutely great present. I've got a copy set aside for my own grandkids that they'll be getting next week or the week after. And so if you need that Christmas present, by all means, run out and get this.
And, Ken, I would just add, if you go to RaymondArroyo.com, you can see the book. But Barnes & Noble also has copies. And if you go to their website or the Premier Collectibles website, they both have signed editions, Barnes & Noble and the Premier Collectibles. I signed hundreds of copies for Barnes & Noble, and they're all over the country. But you can order them through the website, actually. You know, they have a signed and unsigned edition. So if you're looking for a signed one, they have them there.
Very good. And I love the last page because you find out who's actually telling the story.
Spoilers.
I'm not giving it. No, not giving it up.
There,
no, absolutely not. You got to go out and buy the book to figure out who's telling the story.
Right. But I love it. I've been reading it too at my book signings. I read it, and I love to watch the reaction of children, because children get one thing from the story. You know, they're watching and taking the ride in the foreground, which is a great high adventure, and the characters are very accessible and moving and sweet. So there's that happening in the foreground. For adults, because of our life experience and what we know of the Gospels, there's a very different story being conveyed about, you know, there's a refrain the three wise men say in my book. We've got to follow the light, go to the king, and make haste to find the truth. And that those three call-outs, if you will, change as the story moves on. I've been very gratified by the way adults have been touched by the book and changed. I mean, it does kind of turn the lights on for these three figures that are so beloved, particularly in the Hispanic community, where we have, you know, the Day of the Royal Kings, and in New Orleans, of course, King's Day is the beginning of the carnival season. You know, that's when we break out the king cakes and the carnival season begins here. So Christmas just keeps rolling on. But I think it's important to stop for a moment and consider and ponder, who are these men and why have they survived all this time? And what do we have to learn from them? And that's what I took a moment to do here.
Now, and I can tell you, I've read it when I first got it, and I read it again in preparation for the show. And I've gotten different lights and insights that I never would have gotten without this. So for our listeners, I highly encourage you to go out and pick up a copy. Even if you don't have kids to give it to. Get it for yourselves and learn what Raymond has put together here. There's actually a couple of pages that he's included in the back to give you some of the historical context. And the folks that he's referenced a couple of times now in our show today, Father Longenecker and others that have written more extensively and probably adult titles to go along with this. So we have just a couple of minutes before we go to the break, Raymond, and have to let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure. I have been looking forward to this for a couple of months now. And,
you're very kind.
Now, well, the work that you do, and you know, I remember when you were first getting started with Mother Angelica, and EWTN, and now to see you on a regular basis on Fox News with Laura Ingraham and others, it's just a pleasure to watch, and the insights that you bring as a great Catholic journalist. So,
thank you.
I want to thank you.
Thank you so much. And I would tell all the Fox fans. There is a Fox Nation special that launched today, also called The Wise Men Who Found Christmas. And it's kind of a companion to the picture book. And it's a way for adults and families to go a little deeper. It's partially animated, but I interview many of these experts I consulted throughout the research of the book, my eight months of research. So you'll see Margaret Barker and Colin Humphreys, the astronomer, and Father Dwight Longenecker. We take you to Judea, or we're on horseback, and you'll see Petra. We get into many of these nuances and insights. There's a Old Testament ancient world historian who's not, you know, Christian even, but gives you some great insight on Herod and the ancient world. So it's a neat way to explore the book if you're a Fox Nation member, or you can sign up for free, you know, and then make your decision after a few months. I think there's a few months for free. But that's on my Twitter feed and Facebook feed as well.
Very good. Raymond, I can't thank you enough for spending a half hour with us. I know you're a busy man.
Delighted to do it.
And great to get these insights again. One last time, the name of the book is The Wise Men Who Found Christmas, written by Raymond Arroyo, published by Sophia Institute Press, as Raymond mentioned. You can get it locally here in the store at the St. Jude shop, but online through Barnes & Noble. Raymond, thank you again for being with us. I can't thank you enough.
God bless you. Merry Christmas. And look, like the wise men, we have to keep our eyes above the horizon, above the earthly things. And when truth comes upon us, Ken, we've got to race toward it, as they did. Thank you for having me.
Amen. Thanks for being here. For our listeners, we have reached the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back with yet another children's book to talk about.
Hello, Father Glacey here, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the In His Sign radio ministry. It was this radio ministry that I listened to when I was going from being a lukewarm Catholic to an engaged Catholic, and this ministry really majorly affected the Catholic that I am today. Kathleen McCarthy in particular has an uncanny ability to speak to the heart, and when she speaks to the heart, she speaks with God's love, with His grace, and with His mercy. I can honestly say that I am a better Catholic, a better man of God, and have experienced the healing and joy of the gospel because of the great ministry of Kathleen McCarthy. And so I encourage others to listen to her so that they can experience the beautiful work that God does through her beautiful words.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry. to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your financial and prayerful contributions that have kept us on the air for over 40 years and allows us to bring you great shows like today's. If you missed the first half hour, we were joined by Raymond Arroyo and talked about his book, The Wise Men Who Found Christmas. And we're joined in this segment by Claudia Cangilla McAdam, who is a Catholic award-winning author of books for kids and teens. She has an undergraduate degree in English, is a graduate of the Denver Catholic Biblical School, and obtained her master's degree in theology from the Augustine Institute in Denver. She's authored more than 24 books, and her faith-based titles invite kids to learn, love, and live their Catholic faith. Her most recent Christmas work that we'll talk about today is the 44-page picture book, The Christmas Light, published by Sophia Institute Press. Welcome to the show, Claudia. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Ken. I'm so pleased to be with you.
And I've been looking forward to this show for quite a while now. I was hoping to get it in a little bit further away from Christmas so that folks will have a chance to pick up these titles, but there's still certainly time to get them in time for Christmas. So the book, the book we're talking about is called The Christmas Light, again, written by Claudia Cangilla McAdam. It's published by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com. Claudia, you also have your own website at claudiamcadam.com.
You got it right. And you know what? Mentioning sophiainstitute.com, the good thing about having me on now, and Raymond too, just before me, is that until tomorrow at midnight, they are running a special 35% off their selection of their books, including Raymond's and mine. So that it's a great time to go to sophiainstitute.com to get these books.
Yeah, and, you know, we're always looking for presents for kids, and, you know, these may be religious titles, if you will, but the way the stories are told will really pull kids into what Christmas really is all about. It's not about the toys and Santa Claus, but the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and the way that in particular, the Christmas light is told. I found it to be fantastic, and the source of the light, that you learn about at the end, and we won't give it away, really is was the key for me, and that it wasn't actually the star, and so. But it's that journey. It's Serafina's journey up until that point that is really well done, well illustrated, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for those kind words, and I can't take credit for the illustrations. Those were done by Igor Koviar, a man who lives in Israel, and did a beautiful job illustrating this book.
Yeah. So let's just start off by, you know, what was the premise of the book? What brought you to sit down and put this into words?
You know, I've been lucky enough to have about 24 books for kids and teens published, and many of my recent titles are faith-based ones in which the main character is the age of the potential reader. So I take a child and put them in a setting where they encounter Jesus in some way. So The Christmas Light, this story is about the daughter of the Bethlehem innkeeper, and she is cold and cranky and crowded in her home because there's so many people staying there. She's not having a good evening. Her little sister keeps putting her cold feet on Serafina's legs in the middle of the night. Serafina has absolutely had it. And then she remembers this family staying in the family stable across the lane from their house. And she figures if she's cold, they must be freezing. And so the story is what she does from there on, and where she has an encounter with the Christ child that actually changes her mood and changes her life.
Yeah, and I think about how that happens for a lot of us, and in unexpected circumstances. And, you know, the idea that she wants to do this for that family, probably having no idea, you know, who they are or what it's really about. And I think sometimes we find ourselves in those same situations where, you know, we're introduced to people, we're not sure what they're about, and the ability to see Christ in them. And here, Serafina, she gets to meet the Christ child herself, more out of curiosity, I suspect, than anything. But to your point, to kind of serve them, and how we can, each of us can do that, and especially teaching kids how to serve others, I think, as Serafina did.
You're exactly right. And a lot of my books have to do with exploring the virtues and helping build characters and character in my young readers. And I write discussion and activities guides, which I make available for free through my website, ClaudiaMcAdam.com, that parents or educators can request, and it's absolutely free. And we explore the virtues in those works and talk about, okay, this character, how did she live out courage, or did she, you know, in what ways was she prudent in what she did? And I explain what the virtues are, and then I try to get the kids to think for themselves, how can they live a more virtuous life?
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing, for because you're talking to a guy that didn't lead a very virtuous life probably until he was in his mid-30s. And if I had picked up on some of this stuff as a kid, my life may have been completely different. But that's not the way God wanted it, because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I hadn't gone through what I went through. But to be able to bring up kids and use this story, especially at this time of year where they're so focused on Christmas and all the other things that go on around this, to be able to pull them back into the true meaning of Christmas, and not only have them understand the story in a different light, but also to learn these additional things is really a gift.
It is. And, you know, I was going to say real quickly that St. Ignatius of Loyola always said that God can use our imagination to converse with us. And so that's what my hope is in writing a story such as The Christmas Light, is that kids can use their imaginations to put themselves in the sandals of this main character and experience what it was like to be there. What did it look like, smell like, you know, taste like, feel like? What did they hear? What engage their senses and let them experience this encounter with Jesus for themselves. And I think it's important that we give our children and our grandchildren that opportunity. One of my favorite authors, Mary Jo Putney, said a quote that I just love. She says, "What one loves in childhood stays in the heart forever." And it's my hope that what children love in childhood, first and foremost, is for Jesus.
Amen. One of the things that, and I don't know if it's individual authors or Sophia in general, it looks like they're starting to get into this habit of putting out book trailers. Is there a book trailer for this title?
There is. My website, I have book trailers for all of my books, and so you can just go to my website and click on the book trailer for any of my books, and there you go. And actually, I think Sophia even has my book trailer on the homepage of my book that's on their site. So it's easy to find it and to go there, and it gives you about, you know, a minute and a half or so, 90 seconds of a video that shows you what the story's like and what the illustrations look like. So it's a fun way to get a little preview.
And speaking of which, as you mentioned, one of the places you can get it is on Sophia Institute's website. As Claudia mentioned as we got started, that Sophia Institute has a sale going on right now, 35% off of titles until midnight tomorrow night. So, again, if you need, you're still looking for gifts for your children, your grandchildren, nieces, nephews, godchildren, this would make a perfect gift. You can run out to SophiaInstitute.com and pick it up. locally here at the St. Jude shop. They should have it in stock, and if not, they can certainly get it for you if you prefer to go to a local retailer and pick it up.
And it's available at online retailers as well if you get in a pinch.
Very good. You mentioned ClaudiaMcAdam.com. That's where all your other titles are available as well.
Yeah, I have a little preview of each of my books there so that anyone who would like to scroll through and see what other things have I done, what other things are coming out in the future. I've got 3 books on the way still. So it's been a very, very blessed last year and a half, thanks be to God. I surrendered all my work to him and said, Lord, if you find these books of value, I know you'll do something with them. And he opened doors like I could not have imagined.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works when we let God into our lives and give him his our gifts and talents and watch what he does with them. And sometimes it's the most unexpected things. And, you know, it kind of plays out in this title, you know, with Serafina, the gift that she's given. And totally was not what I don't think what she was expecting, and the gift that the Christ child is to all of us. And it's a shame that we always wait until, you know, one time a year to think about it, and maybe it's because of the liturgical calendar and how our church brings it to us each year in this Advent and Christmas season, but to think about the gift that the Christ child is to us 365 days a year, and the gifts that were given, and can certainly use to give back to him.
That's exactly right. And one thing too in this story is that when Serafina brings fire to the Holy Family for warmth and for light, and when she enters that cave that is the stable, it's the Blessed Mother who beckons her closer to the Christ Child, just as she does to all of us every day in our lives. She's always inviting us, come meet my son. And that's what Serafina does, and that's the encounter then that changes her life.
Yeah. And how many people do we know, and I know quite a few whose lives were changed by that same encounter. We were just talking about it in the show we do before this hour, where we talk about the saints in the liturgical calendar, and of course on Monday we celebrated Our Lady of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. And so in talking about the Blessed Mother, who oftentimes she is the one that we encounter that brings us to her son. And that was certainly, you know, my case. I didn't feel worthy of going directly to Jesus himself, and the Blessed Mother led me to him, and continues to lead me to him to this day. And so the way that plays out, the illustration that you see in the book of that invitation that the Blessed Mother gives Serafina, It's heartwarming, and while this may be a children's book, I think it'll certainly stir the hearts of adults as well. So maybe you don't have kids in your life, don't be afraid to go out and get a kid's book. You'll be touched by it, I guarantee it.
Well, that's kind of you to say. I agree. I think there's a lot for adults to get from this book, whether they're reading it by themselves or with younger people. I think it's a great family title.
So we'll get back to the book in a second, but a lot of times I don't get to interact with with the guests I'm going to have, and it'll only be 30 seconds or a minute right before we come on the air. But you were kind enough to send along some information, and one of the things that I was not expecting to see is that you're going to be in an upcoming edition or episode of The Chosen.
That's right. It was the most wonderful experience. My husband and I were able to take our 2 oldest grandchildren to Midlothian, Texas, which is where they film much of The Chosen. And we are appearing as extras in the episode that will come at the end of this season 3 that's just started. And it's the feeding of the 5,000. So we won't ever be able to find ourselves in that crowd, but we'll know we were there. And it was the most beautiful faith building experience that we could do with our grandchildren at that time. We had a wonderful time.
No, I can only imagine. I just happened to watch the first episode last night. I didn't get a chance to see it Sunday night, and really well done. I can only imagine what it would be like to be a part of that. So good for you. And like you say, if you can't find you, then I saw a picture of you on Sophia's website, I think it is. I probably won't be able to pick you out either, but I'll be looking for you.
Well, thank you. And the most wonderful part was, as you know, Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus, is a devout Catholic, and he spoke to the crowd and gave us such beautiful, uplifting sentiments about his life and about how a miracle brought him this role and how miracles are available to each one of us. And then what the really cool thing, Ken, is at the end of the second day of shooting, this took more than one day, it was dark and they had campfires, so the people were gathered around campfires. And when they said cut for the last time, Jonathan said, "Would it be all right with you all in the crowd if I prayed the Our Father with you in Aramaic?" And everybody was like, "Sure." And he made the sign of the cross and then began to pray the Our Father in Aramaic. It was a beautiful witness to his Catholic faith. So there's so many wonderful nuggets about that whole experience and that series itself. If people haven't seen it, go to watch.thechosen.tv and jump in.
No, absolutely. And been watching it since the beginning, and it's so well done, and the insights that you get, whether or not they're 100% accurate, I don't think needs you don't need to debate it. But just watching the episode the other night where it's the Sermon on the Mount and the impact that it had on the apostles. And I was sharing with some friends today that whether it's a book that we read together, it's The Chosen, what have you, it gives you something tangible to set yourself in that scene. And I just pictured myself last night being with the thousands at the Sermon on the Mount, and to be a part of that, and to picture Christ as Rumi was, and him talking directly to me, it makes such an impact. And I think even with your book, The Christmas Light, if we put ourselves, whether we're 6 years old or 60 years old, to put ourselves in the shoes, if you will, of Serafina, as this thing, as the story plays out, it has an impact, and it makes you think about, what have I done for somebody else lately? And especially, we would probably do anything and everything for somebody that's really important, but when we don't even know the folks that are staying in the house across the street, when was the last time that we just did something out of the kindness of our hearts for them?
You're exactly right. We're called to live that charity, live that virtue all the time, even when it's not convenient, maybe especially when it's not convenient or comfortable. That's when we're called to dig deep and do it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that often the results that we get, we may not see them immediately or even in the next couple of days, but at some point there's this revelation that something happened that was greater than the simple act that we did. And I think sometimes God hides from us to keep us humble, but I think at other times the result of those interactions that we have bear tremendous fruit. And sometimes, and usually it's the simplest of things. It's not the grand gestures that we make. It's usually the simple gestures. At least that's what I find in my life, like the gesture that Serafina makes by doing something as simple as, bringing a flame over to this poor little family huddled up in the cave across the street.
And, you say we may not see the results of what we do. We may not even see them while we're here on Earth, but they will surely be revealed to us in the next life. I feel confident of that.
No doubt. Again, our guest today is Claudia Cangilla McAdam, and she's an author, written this great, fabulous book, The Christmas Light, published by Sophia Institute, available at sophiainstitute.com. And the nice thing that Claudia mentioned earlier was that at her own website at claudiamcadam.com, there is a discussion and activities guide. So if you do decide to gift this book to your kids or grandkids, nieces, nephews, godchildren, I would encourage you as well to go out and grab that. Is that something that's printable, Claudia?
It is. I ask people just to drop me a note to let me know which of the discussion guides they would like, and I turn around right away and send them a PDF, which they are free to do whatever they want with it, download it, print it out, email it on, whatever they'd like.
Very good. So it would come in handy if you're going to perhaps give this to somebody that's not local, maybe your kids or grandkids are out of town. And if you have the book shipped directly to them, you can email them this guide as well.
That's so, right. It makes it very easy.
Yeah. Anything that I've missed, Claudia? Anything else that you'd like to talk to our audience about?
Well, gosh, I mean, there's not much time left between now and Christmas, but there's some ways that if families are wondering, how can I make this Advent more meaningful for my kids? I can give a couple of suggestions if we have a minute.
Oh, no, no, absolutely.
One of the things is, you know, there's three things that we can do during Advent, and it's not the same emphasis as we do them during Lent, but it's prayer and it's fasting and it's almsgiving. So I would say we can pray more, and probably reciting a decade of the rosary, maybe the nativity, that's a good one, as a family is a great start. We can also give up something that we like, and maybe take that money that we might spend on a special evening out or extra food or something like that, go to the food bank or go to the grocery store and purchase food for a food bank. Take the kids with you and have them pick out nutritious food, then take what you've purchased to a food bank. And then the third thing is almsgiving in another way, doing something for other people, which we've already talked about in this interview. But kids can use little scraps of paper to write down their good deeds, like wash the dishes without being asked or shoveled snow from my neighbor's sidewalk, and then use those bits of paper to cushion the manger where the baby Jesus will lie. So it helps tie us to the Christmas event and makes us aware of the poverty of the Holy Family and the need of other people in our community. So there is still time left to do some of those things, and I would encourage families to grab one or more of those ideas and live out the rest of this Advent in glory.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I think I mentioned I have two grandkids, 6 and 5, and the one in first grade actually it went to a Catholic school. It was not expected. And next thing you know, my daughter asked me, you know, where can I get an Advent wreath? And they're using it. So the other thing I would just mention is to listen to what your kids are doing or thinking about, the things that they may be learning outside of your home, whether it's at school or prep or CCD here, is what they call it in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, the prep for kids that may not go to Catholic school and go once a week for their Catholic training, to ask them what they're doing or what they're learning, and then to build on that. And I thought it was fantastic when I heard from my daughter a couple of days after I dropped off the Advent wreath that it's actually my granddaughter that's asking to say the prayers every day with the Advent wreath. And so they light the candle and go ahead and say that prayer. So sometimes it never ceases to amaze me how much we can learn from children. And I think when they read these children's books, whether it's yours or Raymond's, that the insight that the kids may have and may talk about are things that you may not have ever thought of, or questions that they may ask. And so it never ceases to amaze me how much I learn both from my kids and now learning from my grandkids about our faith and the love that our God has for us.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Beautifully said.
Very good. Again, our guest today has been Claudia Cangilla McAdam. The book that she's written for this Christmas is called The Christmas Light, published by Sophia Institute, available at sophiainstitute.com, locally here at the St. Jude Shop. And again, make sure if you're going to buy any of Claudia's titles to visit her own website at claudiamcadam.com, where there may be other resources available to you to go along with these. So, Claudia, it sounds like you're a very busy woman, and I thank you very much for carving out some time to be with us today. And we're in touch with Sophia all the time, so when those other titles come out, maybe I can get you back.
I would love that. I'm busy and blessed, and part of that blessing is being able to spend the time with you. Thank you so much. I'm honored. Advent blessings to you all.
Thanks very much, Claudia. God bless and best wishes for a Holy Christmas and a happy and healthy 2023.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, never ceases to amaze me the things that I guess the term could be, come across my desk, and was excited for the show today with both Raymond Arroyo and Claudia McAdam. And, you know, the fact that these children's books come out, I think back to when I was a kid and the golden books and what have you that we would get. And the way that these new books are put together, they're larger than 8.5 by 11. And the illustrations, the color is just absolutely phenomenal. So, like I've said a number of times today, if you have kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, godchildren that you think might be interested in these, by all means, race out and get these titles. Again, St. Jude Shop in Havertown locally may have them. I know they have Raymond Arroyo's book in stock. And these other ones, if you get them online, it may be cheaper yet at SophiaInstitute.com, and take advantage of that 35% off and get these titles in time for Christmas. And again, the 2 hours today have gone by much quicker than I anticipate, and mostly because of great guests like Father McKay and Raymond Arroyo and Claudia. So I hope you enjoyed these 2 hours as much as I have, and I look forward to being with you one more time before Christmas is upon us. And next week we're going to be talking a whole lot in the 5 o'clock hour about the Eucharist and the real presence with a deacon from the southwest part of the country. So you want to stick around for that. Until then, my prayer is that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. And I wish that you take care and be blessed, especially in this Advent season as we approach Christmas, just 11 days away, I guess. So until I see you next week, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.